He said, do you know that we have a law in this town against assemblages of more than four people? And I thought, Bill of Rights? You know, the first 10 amendments freedom, to the Constitution, freedom to assemble. Sure. Freedom to assemble.
Yep.
And he didn't like that, right?
Yeah.
So now
you mentioned this to him.
I mentioned it, and it did good. Not. He did not like it. And no. He says, look, here's the deal. We have three kinds of people in this town. We have the hippies, we got the rednecks, and we got the Mopars. and I did exactly that. I started breaking out laughing, which he also did not like at all. He hated that.
So people who aren't following along, the officer is suggesting that any rowdy car person
is a Mopar.
Is a Mopar.
So all you Mopar guys out there can take you, that as a badge of honor, right? Parades me in front of all these guys that are about to do a shift change and said, Gentlemen, the mayhem that you have to deal with tonight is all because of this guy pointing at me. Right? And I'm just like, how you doing? Hey, welcome to Car Guy Confessions, brought to you by ARP. I'm Jeff Smith. This is my car buddy Cam Benty and car builder Steve Strope, and we're going to tell you some stories. So welcome to another episode of Car Confessions with Jeff Smith.
Car
Guy Confessions.
Wow.
Damn it.
Jeez.
This is a rerun of
so
last
fired.
Time. Ooh. All right. One more time with feeling, you know, in three-part harmony.
Do I have to have feeling?
So welcome to another episode of Car Guy Confessions with Jeff Smith, my good friend Cam Benty, and car builder extraordinaire Steve Strope. We're just going to,
and remember these guys. Got all these guys.
And welcome, brought to you by, welcome as well, ARP, which looks like Prom from back here.
Anybody remember ARP, the Titanic when it just started listing and then it broke in half?
Did
and
it say
everyone
Prom?
Died. It's been an honor playing with you, Jeff.
We're having entirely too much fun here. We're in an undisclosed location right next to the Bat Cave.
Yes.
He's off doing something else at the time, saving the world.
Sure.
And we're just making up stories as we go along. So let's hit some interesting new stuff because breaking news, right? Don't you hear that on the news every night? It's a breaking news. You may not know about this.
Well, this is important for our performance world.
Our performance world, absolutely.
We are letting you know about this stuff.
In all seriousness.
God knows how we found out about it,
God
accident.
God does. That's right.
Carrier
but
pigeon.
How things happen. So General Motors is working on a new software program. It's called Global B.
B?
At B. As
not
in,
A.
At, not A, it's B, because apparently this is the second version.
Oh.
So what it is it's being used on the new I think it's called the C5 Cadillac.
Working on or has
no,
it?
No, it's in production.
Well, I want
in
to
production.
Clarify.
Yes,
right.
It's
working on. It's already here.
It is here. It is here.
Right.
It's a new software program on the new Cadillacs and the brand new C8 Corvette.
Correct.
Let's start with the fact that when you buy a C8 Corvette, you buy the car, but not the software. You
repeat,
are allowed to use the software, but you don't own it.
Yeah,
sink
in.
There's a reason for that, and let us explain. So Global B is GM's first effort in order to take the existing new cars that are going to be communicating with autonomous cars in the future, electric, whatever they're going to be. But the whole idea is they want to be able to talk to each other.
That stupid little shitbox thing that brings my pizza.
Right. Okay. So, but it's important because the more they can communicate, the whole idea is zero car crashes, reduce traffic.
Right.
You know, and improve the traffic flow and nobody gets hurt.
Right.
So all of those are wonderful concepts. And if it happens, it's fantastic, right? So but in order to get there, the vehicles have to be able to talk to each other. So this is a very robust software program. And it allows the C8 to communicate with these autonomous cars. So the autonomous cars know where it's at, even though you are still driving it. So
somewhat.
Hopefully, yes.
Yes.
The reason the software you don't own it is because they don't want you messing with it for the obvious reasons.
Right.
Because on almost all new cars now, you have fly by wire for throttle. There's no direct connection to the brake pedal. So you step on the brake pedal and there's a force that is a sensor that reads that force and converts that into pressure from a force generator. You really don't even have a master cylinder anymore.
Isn't that terrifying?
Not in the. It is.
And the steering's not directly linked.
And steering is not directly linked either.
I'm going to repeat that,
so
kids.
Drive by
wire.
When
you go like this, there's no U joints and a shaft going down to your steering box anymore.
Correct. Correct. So all of this is integrated with, you know, oh my God, let's just call it a robust software. I don't even know how much.
I think it's like Atari.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe one step above that.
Like Pong.
So, yeah.
You know what, when you're saying this, and it is important, my brain's like, I can only imagine what a 69 Camaro would be. It'd be like Pong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Or asteroids.
So think about the concept of you now driving a 69 Camaro alongside all of these other vehicles in another 20 years. You know, think that. That's just crazy to think about.
Right.
2040.
No, what I'm worried about is they say you're not allowed to because our cars can't talk to your car.
And, you know, in the great state of California, that probably could, in fact, happen.
Maybe you can put a transponder.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
so
like you
just so
the
they know
collar,
where you are.
So they know where I am,
right,
and what
right.
I'm doing.
Sure.
So, exactly. You know, it's a little scary from that concept.
A little scary.
Yeah. And so think about this, too. It's like,
well, they already know where I am with my cell phone anyway.
Of course.
How did you enjoy the bathroom at Denny's? You know, it's like, oh, wow. It was good.
It was hard to dance
I'll
to.
I'll give it like 4.5
That's
stars. Right. I don't know.
How'd you get to the half star? Soap dish was dirty.
We can't really disclose why there's only a half star.
It had to do with a dearth of bathroom tissue.
Dearth. Spell that.
Dearth.
Okay. So,
no,
so
today
my question.
Somebody said the word dearth to me. That's the best. Right now, you can stop watching.
Well,
you got dearth out of him.
It's better than moist.
That's right. I used that before.
You know,
we're
the
not
problem is
that.
They don't know what that means.
I know. That's just well enough but, left alone. Yeah.
But with all this situation surrounding all those electronic systems that are now not touchable.
Right.
I mean, you've really completely taken the home mechanic or, you know, anybody
exactly.
who is ever going to fix this is going to have some trillion-dollar piece of machinery in order to tune your car. Well,
to diagnose
you know,
it.
And
our notes say,
yes.
Today we're talking, one of the things we're going to talk about is small-time mechanics.
Which you know, leads directly into that.
Right. Well, and a lot of you guys may not know this, but the big manufacturers like Mercedes or Ford or Toyota have tools now for their mechanics at their dealerships.
This has been going on for
to
decades.
Repair. True. It's not new, but it's getting worse. Because there used to be scanners and other tools that Snap-on could sell to Bob's Auto Repair.
Now they have to license
now,
it.
Or they're not even allowed. That's right. Now your home mechanic, the guy you trust, won't be able to buy the specialty tool to tune that new 2021 car you want to buy. And you will be literally forced to go to the dealership to have that repair done. Which is annoying and frightening and wow. Let that sink in.
Yeah.
Or you know, look at what we're talking about. We're talking about vehicles that have no hard mechanical connection for steering and braking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's got a brain in it that allows it to talk to autonomous cars. You can't have the rights to the software. You get the permission to borrow it while you own the car.
Yeah, that's
and now you can't even choose. You can choose which dealership you go to have it worked on,
but that's it.
I mean,
I have a related story.
But this
to
is
that.
All for a better world. Do I sound like a conspiracy theorist?
We've had
drive-by-wire
actually. We've had drive-by-wire for a while.
Yes, we have.
LS Motors, yes. LT Motors, those motors have had drive-by-wire.
We're thrilled with steer-by-wire, but
we're pretty comfortable with the drive-by-wire kind of orientation. But the brakes and the steering. Those are now something that we're going to have to really get our brains wrapped around because that just seems so foreign because the safe situation was that if something failed, at least you could steer it and put the brakes on.
Yeah.
You know, so that was kind of the orientation you had. But, you know, I just see it every day, and we're talking about things that I get caught up in it because, you know, we've talked about things like, you know, coal miners and their jobs and what's happened with them. But, you know, if you go back in time, there aren't any folks that are building buggy whips anymore, right? You know, we did go through
and
that
ceiling
routine.
Wax.
We did get through
wax.
That. But
Anything else?
I just find it with so many cars on the road, the need for mechanics to be able to repair vehicles, and as a profession, there are so many mechanics that make their livelihood out of being able to fix cars.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if we're going to take them out of the picture,
to be able to choose who they want.
Exactly. Right.
As opposed to being forced to go to the dealership.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Right.
You know.
So kind of along those same lines, I won't use the gentleman's name, but I heard the story that they were tuning a late model Hemi. And downloaded the software.
So like a new Charger?
Like a new Charger with a big Hemi.
Okay.
And went to download the software into it, turned the key on, download the software, and he said immediately the computer contacted the mothership. And that was his term.
Which is not up there. But
no,
in,
but in Hamtramck.
Yes,
or
exactly,
Detroit.
Exactly.
And it was like, said, wait a minute. There's been some, you know, a violation here, and immediately the mothership sent back through the antennas in the vehicle and reloaded the stock software.
Eliminated what you put on it.
Wow.
Yes, so he had to eliminate the antennas in order to disable the connection to the mothership, which
there
I thought
go.
Was...
Which no, I'm
boy,
sure if we had one
telling.
Of those guys here, they'd be like, well, of course... We don't want you tampering with it. There's laws
exactly.
at EPA and da 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 da.
Right.
You know what? Bite me.
Yeah.
I'm looking right at the camera saying
so
that.
So this rolls
I
back.
The car. I want to play with it.
Yes.
This
exactly.
rolls. This rolls back into that thing we talked about with the RPM. EPA going at and the RPM Act. Yeah. So if you're modifying the car to use off road, then that's okay. But if you're modifying the car to be used on the street, you know that's. Well,
but
it's not.
No,
it isn't illegal. It is illegal.
But it's not illegal
from the EPA standpoint.
But if it's off road, it's still not good because look at what's happening.
Right. Well, that's what the EPA is saying. They don't differentiate between the two.
They don't trust that we're going to take it off road.
Right,
they
right.
think we're going to cheat and we're going to put it on.
It's
the,
a little
on the,
a little bit scary.
I was
thinking about actually buying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I drive my cars. It,
yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And I can hear people going, "Well, if everybody thought like that, you'd have a million overmodified, gross polluting." You know, there's not that many of us anymore. Don't
right.
worry about it. Our carbon footprint is so small, we technically don't exist.
Yeah.
So, you know, it who am I preaching to? The people watching this are on our side.
They're
hopefully.
On our side, yes, exactly.
You know,
they're all going,
wow.
Yeah,
hopefully they'll tell their
wow.
neighbors to watch this.
Right.
Sure,
that's
okay.
Right.
Well,
absolutely.
The neighbors so, tune in. They'll go, I love you too, and I hate that Steve guy. And whatever. You know what? I don't care. Cool. You know, whatever. Okay. And with ARP, it's not just a lot of intake manifolds, studs for heads, right. but they also have a humongous selection of American and metric that we use all throughout the car, even large bolts that we use on the suspension components, because you want that same strength, that same durability and reliability, right. plus the beautiful looks.
And stuff outside the catalog.
Right. They have a special order program where if you're a builder and you need some special stuff made, they can do that for you. So it's an amazing, amazing company to work with.
So check them out at arp-bolts.com or check out their catalog. You'll find everything you're looking for.
Pasta Fazool.
He's really a pain.
Reaching back.
Okay.
Terry Cook was the editor of CarCraft magazine back in the late 60s, 68 and 69, 70, I'm sure. And he's created two books called Terry Cook's I Was There. And there's two volumes to this thing. And he actually, we've become friends. And right. and he asked me to contribute a story for one of these books. So
okay. This
is a way for me to promote his book a little bit.
Each one of these stories are written by somebody who was there.
Yeah.
Terry Cook
yes.
is not saying he was there for every one of these.
But he was there at a lot of these stories.
Lot of
a
okay.
lot of them
okay.
in here. But obviously couldn't fill two
Ooh.
Volumes. So
perfect. I opened up to Jungle Jim.
Jungle Jim. Yeah.
That's about as perfect
so,
as it can be.
Terry Cook has an amazing history. I haven't even got through the second book yet. I'm about two-thirds of the way through the first book. And the stuff that he's been involved with
But he
Don
was
Garlitz,
right.
because he was there.
But he was the guy that made CarCraft back then. I mean,
right.
CarCraft was one of my favorite magazines back in the late 60s, early 70s, when I really got into reading the magazines,
yep.
going through the whole deal. But it was his style and character that really made
it. Was
it was
off
great.
The walls. Nuts.
He was kind of crazy.
He was
very
really
crazy.
Crazy. He was really crazy.
So, in fact, one of his columns that I always remember was, I got my magazine and I was all excited, so I went to read it, and the first column, and it looks like it's gibberish. I can't read it. And I realize it's backwards. I thought, oh, they screwed up.
And no, he intentionally did it where you had to hold the magazine up to a mirror to read it.
Awesome.
And essentially was, now that I have your attention, I have something very important to tell you. That was Terry Cook.
Did you ever try that?
No, I don't think that would have gone very well. You know, but in the 60s, you get away with stuff like that.
I would have loved that.
Oh, yeah.
I would have been fine.
It was irreverent, and that was what made CarCraft magazine. So the story that Terry Cook, and this is why he will be my hero forever, is he did, when he wasn't even the editor yet in 68, he did a story called How to Build a Junior Stocker, and that set me on fire. I was like, nice. I had it, you know, all but framed in my bedroom, and I read this story half a dozen times. There were like four pieces to it. Joe Allred built the car, mm-hmm. and a 57 Chevy two-door wagon, because junior stock back in the late 60s was the deal, and all the OEs were involved with it. So Terry was there, and then eventually he went to Hot Rod, and he did some insane stuff. I don't know if this story is in there, probably because he got into trouble, but they did a road test of the Goodyear Blimp. Do you remember
that? I remember that. I was just going to ask you about
that. The road test of the Goodyear Blimp, which in and of itself
Weren't they all wearing it? And it was really a great time. But there's no way they could have shown up in those outfits
and not
shot the photos they were doing and said, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
There's
right.
no way.
Right.
So that, for them to plead that, it was pretty stupid. Well, or at least
the
guy who was there.
And then ask forgiveness later.
That's exactly what it was. So, but he got into trouble on that particular deal.
Yep.
And
so 2021, it's not in the book.
So no, that's probably not in here. But anyway, if you're at all interested in this stuff, because it is really kind of a fun read, it's you can order online on tcookbooks.com. So if you're interested, he's got two
volumes
to it, and it's a fun read.
The story that I remember that made an impact on me that Terry wrote was in 1974, because by that time I was a regular reader of all the magazines, and it was called Requiem for the Z28, and it's probably why I had the love for the cars that I do, because I think I've had five Z28s now, and I know, varying different model years, but nothing newer than 72. The 72, the Cliff Dweller car. So anyway.
Cliff Dweller.
Canyon Carver. Oh. Okay. Canyon, whatever. Doomsday.
Bad? Can we
almost
say bad?
Dead. Almost dead. That was good. But anyway, it's fun to watch Jim Losey climb out of there. But anyway, so he wrote a story about him, and it was just this kind of romantic vision of, you know, how when somebody writes something really important, you just envision what's going on, and you sink yourself into it. It was about they had a 68 Z28, and they were in Utah, and he was sad about the Z28 closing out in 1974, which was the last model year, and he remembers taking this Camaro and uncorking it, and there was a 10-mile stretch, and they just went for it. It was straight as an arrow. Yeah. And I just, that visual for me is long lasting. I can still see it in my mind. It was like, I can see the car. I can see what went on. And it really sunk in deep. And, you know, not long after, I had a 69 Z28 and with a cross ram on it and the whole bit. Yeah.
Had
a cross ram on it. It was nice. It was a good car.
Not really good at part throttle, but.
No, not a great idler, you know, the 140 cam in there and all that other stuff. But anyway, I just remember that particular experience from the pages to reality was something that I thank him for.
And that car was so visceral, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, so now we're talking, go back to what we originally were talking about with new cars. And, I mean, they're fast. I went for a ride in a buddy of mine's C8, and, oh, man, that was impressive. He's banging gears and stuff. And
you bet.
It has the launch and the whole bit.
Right.
And it was like, I mean, made me feel like my car, my one of my Chevelles would be like Fred Flintstone's car. Well, you know, it was like, because it's just, it performs so well. But at the same time, you're probably not going to get that same visceral feel. Maybe you do. I mean, he posted some stuff where he was just ran in Button Willow, and I'm watching driving a laps at Button Willow. It's like, wow, this is impressive.
I remember.
You know, the car is amazing in terms of its performance.
I drove one of those new Trackhawks, you know, the Jeeps with the 707 horse in that.
Yeah.
All-wheel drive.
They're brutal.
They were painful to drive. I mean, literally, it was such a force that it put out. I mean, this is a street vehicle, you know. But of course, it's got all the calculations. You know, we're not supposed to be racing or doing anything at all. But it's got a quarter mile counter, and it's got a it's got G meters. It's like a giant video game. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you that it left so hard. It literally was like, okay, I've had enough for right now. I'm done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
which is hard to believe.
All four tires at the same time. Yeah.
Right.
So
it's
you got
sticking.
Really good traction.
It is sticking. It's like the old Cyclones or you know some of those other cars.
Sure.
But anyway, so there you go. That was a fun deal. I really. But
So what we're talking about here is the visual connection with the magazines that now aren't there. So I mean, is stuff like this going to connect with people? What's the next new thing? Do you think it's going to be? You know, is it just videos? I mean, videos are cool. I watch videos all the time. I mean, I watch that guy's track runs at Button Willow, and it's impressive. I'm pulling to the corners, and I know where the braking points are, and I know where he's going to downshift and everything else.
Right.
But
it's interesting to theorize what the point of inspiration is going to be.
Because that's the question.
You guys ahead of me, and then myself included. I mean, I lived vicariously through Hot Rod Magazine before I moved out here.
Mm-hmm.
Every issue came and I had Carcraft and Popular Hot Rodding when I got into it, and I wanted everything I could get my hands on for it. And I wanted to feel that feeling that I always imagined was there. Like you were saying, when something's written well, you know, like you read a great novel like Great Gatsby or something like that, and it takes you there and you imagine the scenery and the surroundings and whatever. So I'm reading about these. I remember there was a feature that was, I know there was a black S10 Blazer. It was like tuxedo rods. It was shot in front of a mansion. The guy had a hose. There was this whole thing about this Southern California
vibe
and it was like the place, you know, and mix that with Street Rodder or Rod and Custom. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just wanted to be a part of that. And so when the Super Nationals would come to Canfield, I'm not sure if we touched on this in earlier shows that we filmed, but I went out to Canfield. I had no money. I saved everything for a year just to be able to go to drive out there and stay there for 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. And just I remember the enthusiasm and the oh my God of getting to the fairgrounds, especially the first year that I went, which was 87, and seeing the cars that I'd only read about.
Mm-hmm.
In my town, there was nothing pro street.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
Anywhere near.
Not unless you made it.
Yes. And thank you. I'm some more dearth. So, but I did have a lot of dregs. Look that up, kids. Read a book. So I'm there, and here comes Matt and Debbie Hay and Scott Sullivan. And
you know them.
And I know their names.
You've never met them. Oh my gosh.
And I was going to ask that editor guy why I didn't get a poster in my damn issue. So I followed him around in his golf cart. But I remember just wanting to be part of that vibe that my brain created. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be this. And the thing is, it was even better than my imagination. Going to the A&W down on that four lane. State Militia was out on horseback.
Walking track.
Because at the same time that all of us nutballs were there, it was the same weekend as high school graduation.
Oh.
So you got all these kids in the back of trucks where they lined it with plastic and poured water and made pools out of it. And for miles, people are just on lawn chairs up and down this giant, it's four and four, or two and two lane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had never witnessed this. I'm out front. I had luckily, by luck, went over early to the A&W, and there's like, 35 parking spaces? Uh-huh. And I got one of them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's good.
So with my Carmen Ghia, because I'm the weirdo with a Carmen Ghia. Like, who's this idiot? Bright yellow Carmen Ghia. And I'm watching, my brain's already fried from what I'm seeing at the show today, right?
Yeah.
And I'm watching these guys take insanity. Buckets of water, pour them on the street at the red light in front of the A&W, and somebody's taking literally probe mod cars off a trailer.
Yeah.
It does not have headlights. It does not have wipers. It does not have a license plate.
Same.
And they're just, they're coming out and just laying into the shit. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's the best thing in the world. You know, and the cops are like, hey, go for it. You know, like, Valhalla, you know. It's like, so if I wasn't already, in, you know, injecting nitro in my freaking mainlining it, that was it. That was, I'm like, I never, ever want to be away from this ever. And it stayed with me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this crap happened, and I wound up being meeting you and the features and starting my shop and,
right.
and all that stuff. And I tell you what, I don't understand. I talk with older guys or different guys that have other shops and they retire, and they're like, I'm burned out on this. And I'm like, I don't understand that. I'm not burned out on this at all. And I should be, because running a business is like the first yes. way to like want to commit suicide.
Melt you, down.
You know? And I'm like, I can't get enough of it. It, but, and I'm sure some of my constituent friends are watching this so they can pick on me later. But guys, I don't understand when you tell me I don't want to go to SEMA. It's like, you know, the car show thing is, I can't wait to get there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if I'm 9 years old, fine.
Yeah.
But I don't understand. Okay. I don't understand my fellow rod builders like, oh, it's a pain. You got to stand there all day. And I'm like, go walk around and look at cool yeah, ass
exactly.
shit. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I'm it's stuck. I'm stuck to tables signing posters, or I got to do
that's
whatever.
That's why they call us enthusiasts.
But
right.
I still want to go out, and that's where I see all my friends, and I hang out, and I'm still, you know, I'm fire to do yeah. it. It's fun yeah. for me. I love doing this yeah. crap. What the greatest job in the world? I build hot rods, and I'm in Southern California. I got guys in my shop. We're playing Van Halen.
So your friends are telling
Steady.
you don't have a real job.
No, I don't have a real job.
No,
except
and
for
we
running
felt,
the
we
business,
felt that
which
way
is
for
just
years.
Oh, I have all my friends tell me you don't have a real job.
Exactly.
I, no, I don't,
exactly.
You know?
We have enjoyed it for a long time. What was your first SEMA show?
79.
I went in 80.
Yeah, you got me yeah. beat on that one.
Yeah.
Of course, I was like eyes as big as like.
Exactly.
They had cars in 79.
Okay, hand crank. They had a.
Did you fly there
Marlin.
In a biplane?
I went there.
And you survived?
I survived. Marlon and I wandering around.
So we should probably Marlon mention Davis. That our good buddy Marlon Davis has been retired. They retired
yes.
him. They
yes.
essentially, you know, let him go.
For those
after
of you who don't know, Marlon Davis
Marlon
is the
Davis.
Most technically advanced writer.
Yes.
on the planet.
Marlon.
He
Marlon
knows details.
He forget.
I think he.
More
at,
in a minute. Than,
yes.
Oh.
He, tons of details.
And he
tons
started, this is actually worth talking about. He started as the gopher at Hot Rod Magazine. His neighbor across the street was Dick Day, who was that time he was the group publisher at Peterson and had been the editor at Carcraft for a while and was a group publisher for Hot Rod and Carcraft. And he hired Marlon as basically as a gopher, go
right.
run around, do this.
Sure.
And eventually they said, hey, could you... you know, he asked him if he could write something, and they went, yeah, sure, you know, and he created the position for himself, and
technical
he's
writer.
He was yeah, yeah. a technical writer, and he basically just taught himself the job of writing and researching and would go to the depths of it to give you the information.
Yes.
And when I became editor in 87 at Hot Rod, I had to be careful. I mentioned something one time. This is a good story. So he's in my office, we're chatting about stuff, and I was building this 66 at the time, and I wanted to put factory air conditioning. It was a factory air conditioning car. And I said, I'm really having trouble finding the brackets. And he goes, oh, well, let me look some stuff up for you. And he leaves, right? This is like 10 o'clock in the morning. I don't see Marlon. His office is next to mine. I don't see him for the rest of the day. And at 5 o'clock, he comes in. He's got 4 pages of this legal tablet full of part numbers. Every line had a part number on it. And he's running through all these different options of stuff. And these are the pulleys, and these are the brackets, and these are the bracket supports, and these are the bolts. And, blah, 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 blah. And 4 pages of this stuff. And at the end, he says, you know what the best part of this is? I went, what? He goes, none of this stuff's available.
He would have loved that.
It was like,
that's
he
Marlon.
Spent all day looking this stuff up,
and
none of it.
And you can't get it.
And you can't get it. And it was like, and I realized, oh my God, I have to be careful what I say to him.
Yes.
And it actually happened where, I won't say his name, a previous editor that yeah. Marlon had worked for had assigned him the story, and then it became this monster,
well, that's,
and then
that's
decided not to use it.
well, after Marlin did, you know, I mean, weeks and weeks and weeks of research.
So you shouldn't
and then,
tell Marlin to go find out who the second gunner on the grassy knoll is.
No, right, no. Or where Jimmy Hoffa is buried, because right. likely he'll find him.
Oh, or, so, or watch and learn. Watch this.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, he did a fantastic article about ARP.
Yes.
Very yes. educational yeah, story.
Fascinators.
And I believe in yeah. Hot Rod Magazine.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
that was a
wonderful,
great story.
In-depth technical story yeah, that you can was. Learn all about you ARP's bolts. How
yeah, thread by thread.
Notice
thread.
How he worked that in.
See what I did
that was
there?
Good.
That was very good. Good. That was very good.
You get a
gold star. So one of the things I like to do is always assemble an engine with ARP bolts, and it's not just because they're sponsors, but because it really does work. And the stuff is fantastic. I never have to worry about it. Steve, you building cars too.
Yeah, actually, it's part of my baseline design plan when I'm building a car that's going to be shown or mm-hmm. featured in a magazine. It's part of the plan
right.
to have that little bit of diamonds all over the engine bay or in the suspension.
Yeah,
yeah, the stuff is beautiful. I remember a long time ago, I built the first time I ever touched it, 69 Z28. All of the water jacket holes had stripped out, yeah. and I learned about ARP studs.
So check them out at arp-bolts.com or check out their catalog. You'll find everything you're looking for.
I have a Marlin Somebody story. I have a Marlin story.
I'll bet
my
you
initial
do.
Marlin no. story. So Marlin,
there are hundreds of them.
Okay,
by the way.
Marlin is he would be if there were a TV show he would be on. It would be Big Bang Theory. Correct? Nerdy. Very.
Yeah, or I mean, somebody working on CSI.
CSI, yes, yeah. true.
Focus.
I can find
Focus.
That.
Right.
Or asking
Focus.
For a stapler.
Focus. But very, you and, know, he's a bit
and
nerdy.
A sweetheart of a guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Would do
very
anything for
super,
you.
Super nice guy. Yes. I really like Marlin.
Still the vet.
So do I.
He does, yes. probably. I'm sure yes. he does. Yes.
There's another story.
But
another
so, story. So my well, first, stop. My first, not that we get into too many, I have so many Marlin stories. I'm going to tell
so
you one. I'm going to tell you one Marlin story. So Marlin and I are working at Hot Rod. I had gotten there in 80, and he had been there at 79, I guess, about the same time you got there. So anyway, we get the
77.
77?
Yes.
Okay.
By 2 years.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So anyway, so my boss, Lee Kelly, comes to me and he goes, I need you to take the pickup truck that we're going to give away at Columbus
mm-hmm.
and drive it there. And we're in L.A.
And I'm going with like, Marlin.
So, and you and oh. Marlin are going together.
Oh.
So I was
and
like,
no one was killed.
Yeah, so no one was killed. But anyway, so Marlin, but the funny part was it was built in like Indiana, mm-hmm. shipped to L.A., and then we had to drive it back without the speedometer hooked up so that we could have no miles on the deal. So anyway,
oh, yeah.
so anyway, so we're driving
yeah,
back.
The statute of limitations is up on that, isn't it?
Took him 4 days. We gave away the truck. But the capper to the whole deal was, like on my Camaro, the speedometer cable was about like this big, right?
Uh-huh.
So Marlin figures out, he and his dad figured out that they put another tachometer on it, an electronic tachometer, and they figure out,
then they
how,
can figure
fa-
out
how fast we're going.
60 miles an hour.
And at 55 mile an hour speed limits,
yeah,
which is even
yeah.
better. So yeah. anyway, so,
which is
and then he hooks up, the best part of the deal was instead of a radio to listen to or anything like that, Marlin insists on being Smokey and the Bear and the he's the CB guy.
Oh my
so
God.
He's the CB guy. So anyway,
oh,
so
no.
so anyway, so he gets this all set up. So we get in the truck and we start heading out, and we get to we get to Kingman, Arizona, and we run out of gas. That was the first thing, because the gas
and
gas
this is
gauge
a brand new truck.
So yeah, exactly. So the gas gauge goes like this. For the first, it goes about 170 miles on a tank. So it goes this way at 180 miles. You're at halfway. So I'm thinking we have to 360, right?
No,
we didn't get there. So we're on the we died on
at 185 miles. It's empty.
It was empty. So but we were able to nurse it to the off ramp, and then you know we have to go.
Buy a gas can.
So anyway, so we get that through. So anyway, that's fine. Next day, I get in the truck, and I start driving, and I go like, seems kind of sluggish. I wonder what's going on. It's a brand new truck. How big is that hole that you pulled the speedometer cable over? Did you, like, cover it up? And he goes, no. I said, so how big is that hole? Is it like this? He goes, no, it's a big, great big one, like that, about that. So you think any trans fluid flew out of that thing.
Oh, this is the they took it off the trans. They didn't. They didn't plug it.
Marlin just took it out.
Oh my god.
So anyway, the capper to the whole deal is after.
Did it
after,
burn the transmission up?
No, no, we were lucky. Okay. Well, as far as we know. But anyway, so
far
anyway.
As we know.
So anyway, yeah, so we get this thing.
Got 20 miles.
Here's this is a confession. But the capper to the whole deal was we get the truck there. My ears are ringing with CB squelch. So anyway, I get there and we give the truck away. So the truck's given away, and the last thing we do is to take the plate off, right? So I take the plate off. It is completely soaked with
trans fluid.
The bumper, the deal. I mean, it's just like if that truck is still in Indiana, exactly.
It would never rust.
It's trans fluid undercoating. So. Anyway, that's my Marlin story.
and worthless information, because since I'm a tractor-trailer nerd, he had mixed two things. He had mixed Smokey and the Bandit and BJ and the Bear.
There you go.
And that's your useless. Just look it up later. You'll find it. It's with a monkey.
BJ and the Bear.
My friend worked on that show with the monkey. He did.
I love that truck.
Talk about the ultimate in diagnosis. He was one of these guys, like at Universal, was
We're
running
about to
the
talk
deal.
About BJ and the Bear.
So he's running BJ. But the semi is winking out, going total dead at 80 miles an hour. He's driving at 80 miles an hour, which I don't know why they would do that for
sure,
a TV show.
Because it looks
80 miles an hour, and it would literally get to 80 miles an hour, and everything would shut off, and then it would come back on, and then it would shut off. So, what was it? Cable from the bed to or from the tractor to the trailer had a short in it, and at 80 miles an hour, it would stretch far enough, and it would kill
everything
it.
Off.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go. If you thought that was
I'm
an upset.
Glad I know that.
I deadpanned that. Thank you.
Talk about more useless.
Better than this, kids.
Useless knowledge.
So you're talking about that event that you went to that was all
cool deal. Yeah, every year until I moved out here.
So remind me, this is my segment, one quick story?
Yes.
Right? Okay.
One quick story.
This is when I'm.
Advertisers, you too can reach this important demographic. So get ready. All right.
So I'm not the editor at CarCraft yet. So I'm just a staffer. We hired a new guy named David Ellis, and we had created this thing called Cruising USA. CarCraft, it was huge. It was monstrous.
Yeah, I remember.
And I remember going to an event one time where it was kind of dead. It's kind of like Endless Summer where, oh, mate, you should have been here last week. The waves were 15 feet high, and now they're 6 inches. So what we did was we would prime the pump. So my first story was San Diego, which is actually Escondido is where the cruising was. So I was actually a member of the Tri-5 Club at that time. So I found the guy that was the president of the San Diego chapter actually lived in Escondido. So I called him up and I said, could you just tell your club members that CarCraft's going to come on this date? And he goes, why? And I said, just tell your friends that we're going to be there for the Cruising USA. Well, it was monstrous. So I get there, and it was this huge event. There were thousands of cars and everything else. So we primed the pump, and that's where I met my good friend Doug Eisberg and Matt Collins and Craig Campman, and I've known those guys for 40 years. So now we're going to do another story, like, I don't know, maybe 6 months later, 8 months later, in Lakewood, Colorado. So this is going to be...
I know about this.
You know about this story?
This is not a short story.
Well, I'll shorten it up as much as I can.
No, don't. Give us all the gory details.
So David Ellis is in charge of the story, but I'm there to back him up photographically. So I'm going to do my best Neil Britt imitation. Neil was classic of setting the camera up in the back
Ellis
of the truck.
Ellis was new.
Ellis was brand
new.
This
is important.
Ellis was brand new.
Ellis is a newbie.
John Asher was the editor. So we
And Asher's very friendly.
Yes. Oh, yes. So we set
no
this
temper
we set
at
the
all.
No,
no
temper
no.
at all.
So we
no.
set this whole thing up. So we show up and Lakewood was basically there were two malls across the street from each other. So there's like four lanes in each direction and it's bedlam. This is like the Street Machine National.
What you did was the same thing.
We
told
preloaded
them ahead of time,
we preloaded everything.
It's going to
be
up.
Yep, exactly.
And it was a mob fest.
Oh, it was like a flash mob in 1980.
Right. See how cool he is? It was before flash mobs.
So I got my... Back in those days, we wore these yellow CarCraft jackets with this big banner across the blue banner.
Just so the cops could find who the person to blame.
Exactly.
You bet.
So I'm standing in the back of this truck with my tripod doing time exposures. And this guy comes walking up to me. He's got a suit on, right, and a tie, and I'm thinking Rent-A-Cop, right? And so he walks up to me and says, are you from Carcraft? Looking at my jacket, and I'm going to say some smart-ass remark, and I thought, no, I'll play this cool because he's around a cop, and, you know, there's no. So a little bit of love, I said, yeah, and he goes, you need to get down off that truck. You need to come with me. So, and you are, and he pulls his shirt back, or his jacket back, and there's a badge and a gun, right? Ooh, okay. So this guy's serious. So I get down off the truck. My guys who are kind of my handlers, right, are showing us what to do and where everything's going to be. They're like freaking out. And I said, look, it's okay. He's just going to come talk to me and that'll be the end of it. Well, it wasn't. So he says, you need to come with me down to the station. It's like, am I under arrest? He says, do you want to be? It's like, no. Come with me. Okay. So I gather up all my gear and I'm walking and we get into his squad car. It's an unmarked car. He's a police lieutenant from Lakewood, Colorado, and proceeds to read me the riot act, telling me that there's this insanity that's going on the streets is all your fault. He said, do you know that we have a law in this town against assemblages of more than four people? And I thought, Bill of Rights? You know, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, freedom to assemble.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that, right?
Yeah.
So now
you mentioned this to him.
I mentioned it, and it did he did not like it. And no. He says, look, here's the deal. We have three kinds of people in this town. we have the hippies, we got the rednecks, and we got the Mopars. and I did exactly that. I started breaking out laughing, which he also did not like at all. He hated that.
So people who aren't following along, the officer is suggesting that any rowdy car person
is a Mopar.
Is a Mopar.
So all you Mopar guys out there can take you, that as a badge of honor, right?
And if the officer is still alive, ignorant hillbilly.
Yeah, well, exactly. He probably isn't, but because this is a long time ago. But
and a Mopar, just for those who don't know what we're talking about, because we're
not filming
a Chrysler.
Motor parts, which relates to
high performance Chryslers.
Chrysler.
So the story's not done yet because I'm in his car, right? And I think he's going to let me go. No, he takes me down to the station. And parades me. There's about to be a shift change at about now. This is about 11 o'clock. And parades me in front of PM in the evening and parades me in front of all these guys that are about to do a shift change and said, Gentlemen, the mayhem that you have to deal with tonight is all because of this guy pointing at me. Right? And I'm just like, how are you doing? You know, sticks me in one of those interrogation rooms.
He's
right?
One of them Californians.
Closes the door, and I'm thinking, you know, if I wrote for the Denver Post, I wouldn't be treated like this. So, but I'm, you know, I got nothing to do, so I'm just sitting there.
I got nothing to do.
Eventually, he comes back, opens the door, and says, give me your license. I went, okay, why? And he goes, I'm going to run you through Interpol. I did that again. I started laughing.
Oh, my God.
So I take my license and I toss it across the desk. I said, you do your best. I can tell you that I'm a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
There's not so
literally.
Much.
That's right.
Not really. I never Aren't was you? A I was a Cub were, Scout,
was.
Okay. Not a Boy Scout. But there's
Bourne.
No.
That's
you disappoint me. I thought you were an Eagle Scout or something.
There's no speeding tickets.
There's nothing.
There's right. nothing. No, a parking ticket in the last 15 years. I'm a fucking Boy Scout.
I know.
Yes. But you go right ahead. So he's gone for like 25, 30 minutes, walks back in, opens the door, throws it at me.
Nice.
And then says, I hear there's another one of you guys out there. Yeah. His name's David Ellis. He said, well, you got to get him in here.
Drop his
I said,
name. That's nice.
How am I supposed to do that? This is, you know, the days of cell phones.
Yeah.
I said, now we shift the story to David Ellis. David Ellis's guys come running over to him. The cops just arrested Jeff. David goes,
He
was
bails.
Out of there.
Bye.
I mean, bails completely, goes back to the hotel, takes our rent-a-car, goes back to the hotel.
Leaves you for the wolves.
And
that's nice.
Calls John Asher, dials up John Asher. It's now 11 o'clock at night. And he gets Asher on, calls him at home and says, the cops have just arrested Jeff, and I'm on my way to the airport. I'm getting the hell out of here. And God bless John Asher. John Asher said, David, if you leave Jeff there, don't come back. Because you don't have a job.
Simple enough.
So eventually they let me go. Yeah. David shows up. All they wanted him was there. I don't know why. I don't know what they were going to accomplish. David shows up. They run him through Interpol. Lots and he was a rock and roll drummer, so I'm surprised he wasn't arrested for God knows what. But anyway. So
you know
anyway,
how those guys are.
That would
guess. Yeah. They're just like the Mopars.
So that was our adventure in Lakewood, Colorado.
Yeah.
And I just tell everybody, I said, I was never arrested. I was merely detained.
That's almost unbelievable. Like, truth is stranger than fiction. Ignorant enough local cop that was like, and did those things.
Yeah, I mean, wow. we have a law against assemblies of more than four people. And I thought, wait a minute, the Bill of Rights tells me I can do whatever I want.
I had heard the Smith family reunion at the park had like 12 people. Get right down there, bring that shit up
right now.
And I want to know, as a Mopar, why didn't you call the mothership?
That's right.
Circle back to that.
So of course, David wanted to do this big expose on how we were treated, and I thought, well, that's only going to make things worse. On the street, so we downplayed it. So there's the story behind the story to Lakewood, Colorado.
It's a good
Colorado,
story.
So
it's a great story.
But we had a lot of fun, and you know, and it's
like
a great
a lot of
story
fun.
Now. It's a great story now.
Like
at the time,
ball.
I'm thinking, you know, he's going to put me in jail, and for what? I haven't done anything. You know, I'm just
that's
taking
when you
pictures.
Lawyer up.
So yeah. But we also did part of Cruising USA. Actually, we actually got the city of Las Vegas. This is before. But you know, when Fremont Street was open, right? This is back in the early 80s. We actually had them close off Fremont Street, and we shot a cover
for
Car Craft Magazine.
I remember that.
Huge.
Yeah.
And now Fremont Street's completely closed down because it's all people walking around. But back then, and we got
shot.
The city.
What
we
was
got
the car? Do you?
It was a whole bunch of cars. It was a Corvette, Corvette,
like
some other stuff.
Shot, right?
Yeah.
There was a different mindset back then. I remember I'm trying to remember the guy who shot it for me. We shot a Chevelle in front of the Lincoln Memorial. Trying to do that now.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. So
yeah, I don't think they like the word shoot and in front of any memorial.
But right there's now. A guy sitting there and he's in charge.
Yeah.
But No. That was a different time. He worked for the Smithsonian. It was Jeff, sad that I can't remember his name, but it was, I was shocked that he was able to pull it off. So that was good.
Yeah.
And we've shot at other places. We shot a PHR cover at the base in Oxnard. With the Seabees, you know, not far from a place we know nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we shot it with a bunch of jets and the whole bit. It was really, really, they were cooperative.
Yeah,
of course, Steve Reyes shows up and we're having to sign everything off.
Uh-huh.
Is he an American citizen? What's Steve say?
No.
See? Like, Steve.
Making friends.
We're in here, Steve. We're in here, Steve.
People.
Steve Reyes. And Steve Reyes is a whole other story of deals, you know, people, broken cameras.
Ill-spent.
Oh, my God. He's such a...
But
he's
a fantastic photographer.
And actually...
But he wasn't using his camera as a hammer.
Oh, my God. I was standing next to him at the...
Oh, yeah.
He would be... If the flash didn't go off like once, and it was a common with the cord and the whole bit, he'd throw it off the tower at the end of the...
Boom.
At the end of the day.
Hold on. Pizza just arrived. I hear it knocking at the door.
That's right. I'm ready for it.
Your truck's on fire. That's why you're knocking on the door.
Well, that's funny.
But you had a fun story about a deal that went on in your place that was kind of like overhauling more serious. Yeah. I mean, that was a fun story you were talking about where you had a guy come in. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was nice. Okay. Before we get on that, because I was about to go, are we going to... Hold on, we're going to talk to the people who aren't in front of us. How are we doing on time, people who are not in front of us?
We're at 45 now?
Should we
save that story for
I say we save
yes.
that
story.
We
save
that story.
It's too good
now.
To blow it
because,
out now.
Because we can't condense it down. Because I spent too long on my story.
No, but that was
Go
a
ahead.
Short story.
Speak openly, fake person that's not there. Are we gonna touch on any other important things of going on now, like
Holly and
Edelbrock?
Do you want a product of the month or a product of the event?
I think it's a fine time for product of the month.
I do think.
Or day. Or
day.
Hour.
What's the product?
Product of the pod.
Right about
product
now.
Of the
product
pod.
Of the pod.
Product of
Only here can you get that.
Really?
That
it sounded like someone was banging on the door. That's weird.
The great thing is the millions of people watching this right now are going, well, who cares?
This has descended into chaos.
Yes, it is.
So, product of the pod.
Wow.
Product of the pod.
No alcohol involved.
No.
So, none. No. Which is, so I have no excuse.
Just none. Only never on so Wednesdays. It's
in,
Friday.
In the same middle, thing. In the middle of doing this story on aligning bell housings.
Yes. That we did for Jeff Smith's garage.
For Jeff Smith's garage, there's a cheap plug. Thank you very much.
There
you
go.
So
on YouTube.
We were yes.
Anything else you'd like
so
to
we were we were doing bell housings. We were checking bell housings, and Lakewood had just come up with aluminum bell housings. So okay, let's throw this thing on here and see if it's any good.
Right.
And it was shocking. I mean, I tested it and went, okay, that's too good. That's way too good. So we took it and put it on a test fixture. This thing within 2/1000ths of being perfect. Now I can remember old bell housings back in the day where I mean the standard was 30-35 thousandths out. The spec is 5. So Lakewood's new small block and big block Chevy bell housing is a little bit of a reproduction of the old 11-inch flywheel bell housings, except they've added a couple of bolt holes also. So now it'll work on LS or the Gen 3, Gen 4. Yeah. It'll actually work on the Gen 5 where they relocated the top bolt hole at the top of the bell housing off because they had to move it because of the mechanical injector for the mechanical fuel injection. So the direct injection.
Right.
So it's a slick little piece.
Right. And we did some testing.
It was fantastic.
I should give credit to you. You did the testing, and we found so many of the factory units were
way off.
Way
off.
Yeah. And that affects if you're going to pull a shift, especially at high gear, you're going to pull the shift at high gear, because the input shaft and the crankshaft are not aligned.
Yep.
So there's a binding there. It won't shift clean.
Yeah, and this thing was amazingly good. It's not SFI. It's just a stock replacement style of bell housing, but it's fantastic. So
So I
kudos to those guys. They did a good job. Ross McCombs was involved with that whole project. He's the one that started QuickTime Bell Housings and then was involved with this Lakewood.
There's your answer.
That's why it's so
somebody
good.
Somebody who understands quality.
Kudos to Ross for coming up with a good piece. And now hot rodders have a nice piece they can just bolt on and go.
Guys like me, thank you, because now I can just take the piece out of the box, put it up, and have to sit there and foodle around for six and a half hours to get my customer's car taken care of. So it's beneficial.
So we'd like to thank our sponsors, ARP. They do a fantastic job of creating all kinds of cool bolts for us to use on our project.
Fasteners,
absolutely. The stainless stuff is just, sometimes I just take it out and just kind of ogle it.
You're weird. Good.
Right, or you can build these with it.
You build these. Which, by the way, they don't know this yet. I'm taking these home with me.
That's
going to be wall art.
Those are pretty awesome.